This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, more information coming out of Orlando, and the facts do not match the left's narrative. A former officer with the Department of Homeland Security will explain a little bit later. And next month, delegates to the Republican National Convention will meet in Cleveland, Ohio, not only to formalize the endorsement of Donald Trump, but to craft the GOP's platform. Now, this is something that the parties do every 4 years as a statement of principles and priorities. Now, as the nation becomes more divided, these platforms have become a means to communicate the contrast between the two major parties. But it has also become more contentious. It's become a more contentious undertaking, sparking internal division within the parties. Now, what can we expect to see in Cleveland? Well, co-chair of the Platform Committee, North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox, will join me in just a moment to discuss. Also, breaking news out of Texas today in the case of David DeLayden, who was indicted by an ally of Planned Parenthood after his videos exposed the nation's largest abortion provider for trafficking in aborted baby body parts. David DeLayden joins us a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics and our guest, again, by going to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Also, you can sign up for my daily update and our email alerts right there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can also email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, @TPerkins. By the way, let me remind you, coming up September 9th and 10th is the Values Voter Summit. This is the premier conservative event for conservatives all across the country. It'll be held in Washington, D.C. This year, the recipient of our leadership award is Dr. Bill Bennett. To find out more how you can be a part of this great event, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Coming up, the GOP will decide what will remain in its platform. This is 1 week before the GOP convention gathers in Cleveland, Ohio. Now, there are some anti-family groups that hope to weaken the GOP's strong stand on issues such as life, marriage, and religious liberty. However, they're going to meet with some resistance. Earlier today, FRC Action announced a coalition effort with a number of other organizations, which I will help lead as a delegate on the platform committee from my home state of Louisiana. Now, why is the platform important? And secondly, will there be a battle this year over the platform? Joining me to help answer that question is one of the two co-chairs of the platform committee, the Congresswoman from the 5th Congressional District of North Carolina, our good friend Virginia Fox. So, Virginia, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. I'm delighted to be with you.
Let's talk first off about the importance of the party platform. Why is it a significant document?
Well, as you said in your opening comments, it does send a message to the world. I mean, the American people, but to the world. And, you know, this document, the platform, as well as the agenda project, A Better Way, which Speaker Ryan and we have been working on almost since the time he became Speaker, is something that's very important to us because we're telling the American people, here are the beliefs, the philosophies, the principles of the Republican Party, and we want people to understand what we would do with a Republican president, a Republican House, a Republican Senate. In years past, many presidents have not run on their platform. After they've gotten elected, then they went out to do other kinds of things that were not in the platform, and they weren't able to sell those to the American people. What the Speaker has been saying on our agenda project, again, the better way, a better way, as well as on our platform, is we're going to make this a contest of philosophies and principles, not a contest of personalities. When we run on our principles, we win in this country. The American people, the majority of them, are with us. And I think the platform will get a lot of attention this year, perhaps more attention than it has in the past. And I frankly am extremely honored to be on the platform committee. I know that my other co-chairs are honored to be on the committee, Senator Barrasso and Governor Fallon. I'm friends with both of them. We are three rock-ribbed conservatives. And
well,
I think that is that bodes very well for our coming out with a very, very strong conservative platform. You know, 2012, the platform was considered maybe the most conservative ever. And I expect the 2016 platform to be very conservative.
Well, let me first say, I don't think anyone can challenge your credentials as a solid conservative. And I would add to that list of adjectives, fighter. I've watched you and worked with you, and you are a fighter on those key issues. But let me go back to something you said. You think there's going to be a lot of attention placed on this platform. Why?
Well, because I think the American people are more engaged this year. It is true that we have two very strong personalities running for president, and they stir either tremendous positive feelings or negative feelings. And I think that what we want to do, again, is what the speaker has said, and that is show our principles and have people paying attention to what we believe in. And I believe if people read the 2012 platform, more Americans will agree with us than will agree with the Democrats. Tony, one other thing that's important to point out, and you're going to be on the platform committee, I understand.
Correct.
So two people from every state will be on the platform committee, two delegates, and all of our work will be done in the open. And because of 24-hour TV, again, because of the interest in what's happening nationally, I think a lot of people will be watching our work in Cleveland, and it's a contrast to what the Democrats will be doing. The Democrats have, I believe, 15 people on their platform committee, and their work will all be done in secret. Our work will all be done in public.
Well, Congresswoman Fox, let me ask you, talk about the contrast. Now, last time, yes, I was on the platform committee 4 years ago for the Republicans. But the Democrats, they met in your home state of North Carolina 4 years ago, and it was at that convention where basically they voted God out of their platform. There is a sharp contrast between the two parties, and you see it in the candidates, but I think when it gets to substance, it is no clearer than when it comes down to this party platform, which is why I think people understand it is an important document for that reason.
That is correct. And, Tony, I think we're going to have I've not been involved with the platform committee before. You have. I think you know that last time there was very little controversy. I understand from talking to my friend Marsha Blackburn that much of the platform was just passed by voice vote. And I honestly expect that to happen again on this case. I urge people, though, if they have ideas, to go to their delegate who's on the platform committee, and that information is out there, I believe, on www.platform.gop, or to come to anybody they know. They can come to you, even though they don't live in Louisiana, or they can come to me as one of the co-chairs and express their opinions on what they think should be in the document. But I would urge people to read the document from 2012, I think they'd be very pleased if they haven't done so.
Absolutely. I mean, the country would be a lot better off if it had been governed according to those principles. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We're glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. My guest is North Carolina Congresswoman Virginia Fox. She is one of the co-chairs of the GOP Platform Committee, which will be meeting exactly a month from now in Cleveland, Ohio. Now, there's been some rumblings, Virginia, from kind of those on the moderate side of the Republican Party, liberal side, I'll be kind, moderate side, that are talking about changing some of these core principles of the Republicans. There's been discussion about the life issue, marriage issue, some of those issues. Do you anticipate any of those key principles being altered?
I really don't, Tony. I really do not, because, again, it's those principles that set us apart from the Democrats. And we want to give the American people a clear choice in this election this fall. We believe that if we give the American people a clear choice and they vote for our candidates, they vote for our senators, our House members, and our presidential candidate, that we then will have a mandate from the American people to move forward with the principles that we are espousing. As I said, in years past, we've had presidents who've gone out to do other kinds of things. They were not successful because they were not a part of the platform and they didn't get buy-in from the American people. So I think what you're going to see here is strong advocacy from all segments of our party for this platform, because it is going to be what's going to make us successful in the fall.
So your encouragement to the party's nominee coming out of the convention would be to pursue the principles and govern according to the party's platform?
Absolutely. And nothing that Mr. Trump has said or his representatives indicates anything other than but that he will support the party platform in the campaign in the fall. So I'm feeling very positive. The speaker's been very positive about his discussions with Mr. Trump, and also staff have been very positive about their discussions with staff on the Trump campaign. So well, honestly, I know you guys are gearing up to make sure that there's no weakening of our principles and our positions, but I've seen no indication thus far that there's a movement to do that.
Well, as one of our mutual heroes used to say, peace through strength.
And that's, I think, going exactly right. Peace through strength is right.
Going into the convention with strength to defend those principles may very well ensure we have peace and we get along and we preserve those. Virginia Fox, as always, great to talk with you. Look forward to being with you in Cleveland.
Great to talk to you too, Tony. Thank you. Thank you for all that you do.
All right. Thanks so much. Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina. She's going to be one of the co-chairs at the RNC convention, the platform committee, which I'll be on. In fact, as I mentioned earlier today, we announced a coalition effort with a number of organizations, including the legislative arm of Concerned Women for America, the Susan B. Anthony's List, and March for Life. We're going to be working with him to ensure that these core conservative values. Now, you may not be big on the Republican Party. I'm not, quite frankly. Although I appreciate some of the Republican leaders. I think Reince Priebus is doing a good job. He's, I think, steered the RNC in the right direction. And we want to make sure that, as Virginia said, the next administration operates according to conservative principles. We've got to protect them first, and that's going to happen next month. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to be talking more about Orlando with a former Homeland Security official. Don't go away. We're right back after this.
Did you know that the Arlington National Cemetery was originally built during the Civil War? That's right. It was the home of Robert E. Lee, actually, who was the general of the Confederacy. Little known fact about the Arlington National Cemetery, which today is an iconic tribute to our fallen heroes. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We'll visit the Arlington National Cemetery in September on our spiritual heritage tour, as well as going to many other sites in our nation's capital. We'll also go to the home of George Washington, Mount Vernon. In addition, Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown will be a place we visit just prior to our nation's capital. So if you'd like to go on either of these tours in September or both, We welcome you to find out all the information at the website spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hope Reigns will be in Sealy, Texas, about 50 miles west of Houston, starting Saturday, June 11th, ministering to an area devastated by flooding. Volunteers are needed now. Here's 8 Days of Hope president, Steve Tiber.
We need your help today. I mean, it's that simple. We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. You know, the best sermon I ever heard was the one I saw. We're just there to love others as God commands us. And here's where you and I get to be the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
Hope Reigns will provide the food and lodging for all volunteers for this Texas flood relief effort. You must be at least 18. To volunteer, call 662-255-7565 or email hoperains@8daysofhope.com. Financial donations are also needed to support this effort. For more information, visit 8daysofhope.com. Hope Reigns is a ministry division of 8 Days of Hope.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. As you make the drive home, drive safely, but listen intently. If you miss anything, you can always check it out later at TonyPerkins.com. On Twitter, at T. Perkins. All right, more information, and this is going to be happening for days now. As the way investigations work, you do one interview, leads to another interview. You know, I know from my days in law enforcement, you track these things and you begin to build a profile. I mean, it could take 6 months to put this picture all together, basically following all the leads. But as more information comes out, it's revealing. This attack is now forcing Americans to further question the Obama administration's approach to fighting radical Islamists. And you can see the president, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later, the president's speech today, clearly it was getting under his skin, and he was lashing out at Republicans and those who have criticized him. But since 9/11, now there have been over 36 incidents where Americans have been killed here in the United States by Islamists. Now, you don't hear about that, of course, because many of these are not, they're labeled something else. They're not labeled terrorist attacks, they're workplace violence and things like that. But the reality is the problem is getting worse. It's not getting better. So why is our government failing to keep Americans safe from Islamic terrorists here on American soil? Joining me now to help us answer that question is Philip Haney, former officer with the Department of Homeland Security and author of the new book, See Something, Say Nothing. A Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. Philip, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right, Philip, what do we know right now as to what is unfolding in the investigation in Orlando? What's the picture right now?
Well, one of the most incredible things to me was the realization this morning that his father is the vice president of the Fort Pierce Mosque. The very person that came out initially and kind of gave the impression he was not aware of what his son may or may not have been doing, turns out he was the vice president of the very same mosque that his son went to.
Now, this mosque has some connections with organizations that are linked to other organizations that suggest that not everything that's being talked about or conducted is innocent.
Correct. It's linked to the exact same network that I've discussed before with the San Bernardino shootings. The network that I was working on when I was an active duty officer called the Tablighi Jamaat case or the Institute of Islamic Education case where they deleted the 67 records, it took me 3 or 4 hours using open source information plus the knowledge that I've acquired in my career to tie up the network and link these Fort Pierce mosques all the way back up the chain, clear to the Tablighi Jamaat network, and mm-hmm. the Institute of Islamic Education Network, direct tie.
Okay, so let's talk. They're linked to these organizations. Now, what's significant about that? Explain that to our listeners.
Well, the reason why the other organizations are important is because we already had derogatory information on them, known ties, affiliations with potential ties to terrorism. You can view it as a solar system, planets in the solar system. The one thing that they all have in common is that they're affected by the force of gravity from the sun. And within the Islamic worldview, the community is the center of all social activity. Muslim individuals don't act on their own. They depend on the environment of a community. And he was no exception, the Orlando shooter, nor was Syed Farouk in San Bernardino, nor were any of the other individuals that have done terrorist attacks in America. They're not isolated, operating in a vacuum. They're part of a network. And that was my specialty when I was an active duty officer, was finding the networks.
Okay, but Philip, let me ask you this. When they have these connections, there's these links, but is that not just circumstantial evidence? Doesn't suggest there was anything criminal, does it?
Well, it's how you put the case together. It's what we call connecting the dots. When we say we want to connect the dots and put the picture together, we're just letting the evidence go where it follows. But preponderance of information in our system led to very clear ties or potential ties to terrorism, meaning maybe perhaps financial support or even like the young man who was a member of the Fort Pierce Mosque who went to Syria and blew himself up. Those kind of affiliations or individuals transiting through an organization should put them on the radar for careful watching.
So it would suggest that you see these individuals that all have contact. Well, let's say this, take, for instance, Fort Pierce, this Islamic center. You have one going, you know, overseas into an area, blowing himself up. You have another involved in a relationship with a terrorist organization. So that would suggest that further investigation is warranted, that there could be activity within that mosque leading to radicalization. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And the FBI has been discussing its approach to the case. So they conducted interviews twice, maybe three times, and closed the case. But the FBI is not the only law enforcement agency in the federal government. There's also my agency, my former agency, Customs and Border Protection. That agency was created to derive those additional bits and pieces of information that maybe the FBI didn't have. And ideally, we're supposed to be working together, sharing back and forth. But as was revealed in the interviews lately, we're not really sharing back and forth to the level we could be or should be. So there's disconnects there in the system in terms of cooperation. And then
goes
overall discernment.
Hey, Philip, we're up against a break. I've got one more question for you, if you can hold on over the break, just a couple of minutes, because it's more than just sharing of information. There, you have stated that this information, some of these investigations leading to this information were basically shut down, that you have our own government preventing investigators from following these leads to where they might go. So I want to talk about that when we come back. So hold on for just a second. We'll be back, folks, after the break. We're going to finish this conversation with Philip Haney. Then we're going to be hearing from David Delight. the Center for Medical Progress, breaking news out of Texas today regarding the charges against him. We're going to be talking with him about that. And we'll be taking your phone calls. All of that and more still to come here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Retail sales numbers did come in a little bit better than expected, up 0.5%. One of the things that we've got to look at is, of course, the price of gasoline. That has hurt the headline number of retail sales numbers. But remember, we still have a lot of ground to make up over the last 3 or 4 years. But it would indicate that maybe this is 2 months in a row where we've seen better retail sales numbers than expected. So maybe Americans are starting to spend a little bit of money in the retail sector. That would be good news for the overall economy in general. But remember, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months does not make a trend. We've got a long, long way to go, but it is a start. One of the things that is happening today in the markets, it looks like we could be looking at 4 negative days in a row on the indices. It'll be interesting, but everybody is waiting for the Federal Reserve, what they're going to do on Wednesday with interest rates. As I've indicated, they're not going to raise interest rates, that's for sure. I guess they're looking to see just how dovish Janet Yellen's tone is going to be. But the other big concern is right now, from a poll standpoint, it looks like the polls show in favor of Britain leaving the Eurozone. Of course, that vote is next Thursday, and that is a cause for some concern. I don't think it's a cause for any concern. Will there be a knee-jerk reaction in some of the markets, especially the European markets? Sure, there will be, but I don't think it's going to be catastrophic by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's going to be a good thing for Great Britain in the long run. The other interesting thing, 10-year bond for the first time ever in Germany, negative interest rates. And here's the interesting part. People have been flocking to fixed income, even with negative interest rates.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. We are glad to have you along with us on this Tuesday afternoon. As I mentioned, more information coming out of Orlando, and this is going to be coming for days, folks, and weeks. And it's worthy of discussing as we look at the inability or the, well, I mean, it's not inability. I think we have the ability to protect Americans here on our soil, although it is difficult in a free society. But the actions and policies of this administration are almost guaranteeing that we are going to continue to see an escalation of these types of attacks. My guest, Philip Haney, former officer with the Department of Homeland Security, author of a new book, See Something, Say Nothing, Homeland Security Officer Exposes the Government's Submission to Jihad. Find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, Philip, thanks for holding over the break. You have stated before, back after San Bernardino, that investigations into a number of these Islamic centers and mosques were shut down for political reason.
Correct, I did.
Explain how the approach, the policies adopted by this administration are leaving gaping holes in America's security policy.
Well, I'll start with Tashfeen Malik, the woman who was married to Syed Farouk with the San Bernardino shootings. About a week after the attacks, the Department of Homeland Security Civil Rights and Civil Liberties branch came out, publicly announced that one of the reasons why they didn't vet Tashfeen Malik's social media was because they were concerned about violating her civil rights and civil liberties. My premise is that is a violation of the civil rights and civil liberties of American citizens. We are supposed to know who these people are with any means possible to guarantee that they're safe enough to come into the country.
Now, Phil, let me stop you there. Are you talking about her public postings on social media?
Yeah, they said they didn't vet them. They didn't look at them.
But they're public. It's not like they're digging into anything
I know, I understand. But that's only one indicator of the emphasis on this concept of countering violent extremism, otherwise known as engagement in dialogue, with a particular emphasis on civil rights and civil liberties. And there's nothing wrong with civil rights and civil liberties, but not when they undermine the integrity of our country and the constitutional principles that have been implemented to keep us secure and safe.
No, I understand. You misunderstood my question. I mean, this is public documents. I mean, why would the government be hesitant to look at her public postings?
Well, all I can say is what they said, that they were concerned about violations of civil rights and civil liberties.
That's crazy. I mean, it's not like they're digging through her personal journal. They're just reading what is publicly posted. To me, it would seem that anything someone says in public is fair game to be viewed and looked at to determine if you're a threat to this country.
Well, the reason why I emphasize that particular illustration so much is that that's exactly the same reason why they shut down the bigger case that I worked on at the National Targeting Center, called the Tablighi-Jamaat case. It's also basically the reason why they deleted the 67 records out of a subsequent case that I did. It all had to do with concerns of violations of civil rights and civil liberties, primarily because the group I focused on, Tablighi-Jamaat, which has between 75 and 125 million members worldwide, is not a designated terrorist organization. So therefore, they thought that we were being discriminatory and unfair by focusing on individuals in that group, even though we had already proven, literally hundreds of times over, that they were committing immigration violations. And we prevented entry or refused visas or canceled visa waiver applications on 1,200 different individuals in just 11 months. But they still shut the case down.
Let me ask you a question, Philip, as an investigator, and I want to step out of this whole issue of terrorism. But if local law enforcement were handcuffed in such a fashion that certain things they couldn't investigate because it was too politically sensitive, would we ever solve any crimes in this country or prevent them?
Only one by accident or by stroke of good fortune or God's intervention. But as far as basing it on law enforcement principles, fact-based analysis, no.
Because this is insane.
Information. It's like having a car without a key. The car is perfectly, it runs fine, but you won't go anywhere if you don't have the key to turn it on. And they've taken the key from us. They've handcuffed us. We cannot create cases and bring them up to probable cause level when we're not even allowed to consider some of the most basic affiliations and beliefs of these individuals that have already publicly stated they intend to do us harm.
This is unbelievable that this is the policy of this administration. Well, I guess not unbelievable, but it is believable based on what this administration has done.
If people would like to check it out, go to the Touchstone Guidelines, the training guidelines of the FBI. They published them in 2012, Touchstone Guidelines for Training. And in the first paragraph of the three-page document, it says, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, just because an individual is affiliated with a known terrorist organization, you're not allowed to assume that that person himself is a terrorist.
Wow. Hey, Philip, we got to leave it there. We're up against another break. Thanks so much for sticking around. Fascinating. We're going to be talking to you more as this unfolds. Folks, don't go away. On the other side of the break, David DeLeiden's been waiting. Breaking news out of Texas. He's going to share it with us. Don't go away. We're back after this.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example.
This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
Take a coffee break and enjoy American Family Coffee's latest, newest coffee, Freedom. With bright acidity, a medium body, and deep richness, this Tanzanian pea berry coffee will be perfect for a pick-me-up. Available ground and whole bean in 12-ounce or 5-pound bags. Enjoy great fair trade coffee that furthers the mission of American Family Association. You can order yours now at afastore.net.
Target is not listening. They're hoping the AFA boycott will just go away, but we're just getting started. More than 1.3 million people have already signed the pledge to boycott Target because they agree men do not belong in the women's room. Ask your friends to add their voice to make Target listen by signing the boycott pledge at afa.net. Share the link on social media. Our current goal is 50,000 new signatures this week. That's afa.net.
God reached Michael Brown with faith in Christ when he was a 16-year-old drug-using rock and roller. With that faith, Dr. Michael Brown has devoted his life to spreading the gospel and sparking moral revolution.
The world continues to go crazy all around us. I'm here to be a voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity.
Dr. Brown has debated Jewish rabbis, agnostic professors, and gay activists, and is widely considered to be the world's foremost messianic Jewish apologist. Dr. Michael Brown will be one of the speakers this year at the annual AFA Retreat at the Cove, October 3rd through 6th. Space is limited to 400 attendees, so make your plan soon. Get more information at afafoundation.net. Register by calling 800-950-2092, option 1, followed by option 2. It's the annual Retreat at the Cove in the beautiful Smoky Mountains of North Carolina at the Billy Graham Training Center in Asheville, North Carolina. And we hope to see you there.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. Lots of information there for you, resources. Twitter at T Perkins. Let me again remind you, this program is provided because of partners like you across the country that financially support the Family Research Council. Become a partner. Go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and we'd love to have you be a part of the Family Research Council. All right, good news out of Texas today is one of the charges against the Center for Medical Progress President David Lyden was dropped after exposing the true nature regarding the selling of baby body parts by Planned Parenthood. A grand jury indicted Mr. Lyden. However, a cloud hovered over the indictment because the district attorney of Harris County had a cozy relationship with Planned Parenthood. So cozy that she leaked information out about the investigation of Lyden to Planned Parenthood. Well, today a judge threw out one of those charges pending against Mr. Lyden, and he joins us now. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's great to be on.
Hey, thanks so much for holding over over the break as we were having that other conversation, but I really wanted to get to this today. Tell our listeners what has taken place today in Texas in the court.
Well, what just happened today in Harris County in Houston in Texas is basically one more of many indications that the indictments against myself and my colleague Sandra Merritt at the Center for Medical Progress are nothing more than politically motivated sham indictments handed down by a runaway grand jury that was colluding with Planned Parenthood the entire time. And this is something that we know because of the under oath declaration from Planned Parenthood's own attorney in Houston, Josh Schaefer, also confirmed by the filings of the district attorney in this case so far. And the district attorney's office in Houston had basically argued, so what, you know, what basically a kind of Clinton-esque, what does it matter at this point if we colluded with Planned Parenthood in obtaining the indictment? They said they're still valid on their face. The case should move forward. And the judge today or I guess late yesterday in Houston, just slapped down that argument and said no, the first of the two indictments is completely void on its face, directly contrary to the argument from the district attorney's office. So it's very exciting. You know, this was a charge that was pretty absurd. It was a charge that they alleged that I had attempted to purchase human body parts, which is ridiculous, because if somehow me pretending to want to buy human body parts in the course of an undercover operation, if that was somehow evidence of criminal activity on my part, then surely Planned Parenthood actually selling them in real life, with a history of doing so for over 10 years in Houston, that should be, you know, 10 times or 100 times more the criminal evidence of that kind of activity. And yet I was the one who was cited. Planned Parenthood was not.
Absolutely. So, and also, you know, as a former law enforcement officer who did a little bit, not a whole lot of undercover operations like this, you have to actually have a transaction. You have to – you can't just talk about it. There has to be exchange of value in or something exchanged for the promise of something.
And that's an ethical line that we were never going to cross from the very beginning. So
right.
Yeah.
You were just talking about it. You were saying, all right, what would this be? How could we do this? There was never any exchange, so therefore there was no crime committed. So that's on its face. This shows you the district attorney either does not know the law in presenting this to the grand jury, or, as some have suggested, was politically motivated. All right, what about the second charge that remains in this indictment? Where does that stand?
Well, so that is still pending. It's actually because they're different levels. This one was a misdemeanor that was just dismissed. The other one is a felony charge. That is going to be heard in a different court. We have a pending motion to dismiss that indictment as well. The hearing on that is going to be on July 26th. And so that's just pending, and we're waiting to hear from a different judge in that case. That indictment as well is based on really a pretty discredited legal theory at this point, that sort of all of the different cases that Planned Parenthood and their allies have brought against me and CMP are all based on this idea that somehow undercover journalism work is a form of fraud.
Right.
Now, typically, whenever a major corporation gets stung or exposed really badly in an undercover journalism operation, they oftentimes do turn around and either sue or come after the whistleblowers or the citizen journalists under some theory that, well, they lied to us, and so therefore it's fraud. Well, the courts have struck down that theory again and again and again. It's completely discredited. But that's the theory that that Planned Parenthood civil lawsuits in California are relying on. It's also the theory that the felony indictment from the grand jury relies upon in alleging that we used a fake ID with an intent to harm or defraud Planned Parenthood, which is ridiculous, because exposing the truth about somebody is not fraud or harm in any kind of legally cognizable sense.
But David, isn't this about something more than that? Isn't this about trying to intimidate and bully those who would dare pull back the curtain on the nation's largest abortion provider?
Exactly. Planned Parenthood knows that they got caught, and they got caught really badly over the past year, because now the entire, not just the American people, the entire world knows that Planned Parenthood has been harvesting and selling the body parts of the children that they abort, and they've been doing this for decades. And some of the really incredible information that's coming out of the Select Investigative Panel in Congress right now is showing that the videos only scratched the surface of what was really going on. We have the actual contracts now, thanks to the work of that committee, that show systematic violations of HIPAA for the past 5 years on the part of some of the biggest and richest Planned Parenthood affiliates in the country, and their relationship with for-profit body parts harvesting companies like Stem Express, where they would just open up the confidential patient files and patient medical charts to contractors literally off of Craigslist from Stem Express, who could come in and use the private patient medical information to target specific pregnant women to get the highest quality body parts. So it's really, really troubling exactly how deep the rabbit trail goes, and how many just a violation on top of attack on human dignity on top of legal violation that was happening within Planned Parenthood's baby parts program. Those are the details that will continue to come out, and Planned Parenthood is desperate to try to cover that up in some way. So,
well, David, we rejoice with you today on this news. We anticipate the other charge. Pray that it's dropped as well. But I want to commend you for your diligence, your fortitude, your courage in telling America and the world what is actually happening in these abortion centers and what Planned Parenthood and others are doing. And so I just want to thank you. Thank you for joining us today, and thanks for your courage, David.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you.
All right. David DeLeiden, young man. You know, this is, I write about these folks like this in my book. In fact, if I hadn't written my book yet, David would be in it. No fear. I write about these young people who, driven by conviction, choose to do something. They don't just sit back and say, you know, that's a bad thing. It shouldn't happen. I mean, the pressure that this guy is getting, the attacks that he is getting. I mean, they've raided his home. They've charged him, you know, indicted him through this grand jury. They're doing everything they can. This is a billion-dollar organization. And by the way, half of that comes from you, from taxpayers. And he's standing up against them. This is why I take heart in the young people coming up in this country. There are some young people, and it's not just a remnant. A remnant's about 10%. It's more than that. There are young people, folks. Some of them are your children. And some of you are listening to the program today. And I applaud you for being willing to live out your faith in such a way that it changes the world around you. See, that is exactly what Christ has called us to do, is to live out our faith in a real and a tangible way that changes the world around us, to care enough to do something, to act. David DeLeiden has done that. I encourage you to pray for him. All right, we got a few minutes left. I want to go back to this earlier topic with President Obama. Today he's making a speech. He made a speech earlier today around noon. And I watched part of it. It's about all I could take. I used to watch it so you didn't have to, but I can't do that anymore. I just can't take it. I have to go to my prayer closet and pray after I listen to him, because he makes me so angry, because he's deceptive. But I want you to hear a portion of what he had to say, because most of his speech, instead of going after the Islamists who are threatening to kill and are killing Americans, instead of going after the radical jihadist, he goes after Republicans and conservatives who challenge him for refusing to call this what it is. You know, as I said earlier, you know, remember Fort Hood? According to the Obama administration, that was workplace violence. And so people are now challenging him on why he will not call these jihadists in their activities radical Islamic terrorists. And so he spends a good portion of his speech today pushing back on that. And this is a clip of what he had to say.
They know full well who the enemy is. So do the intelligence and law enforcement officers who spend countless hours disrupting plots and protecting all Americans, including politicians who tweet and appear on cable news shows. They know who the nature of the enemy is. So there's no magic to the phrase radical Islam. It's a political talking point. It's not a strategy. And the reason I am careful about how I describe this threat has nothing to do with political correctness and everything to do with actually defeating extremism.
Defeating extremism is not a strategy. It is a talking point. Look, I go back. I mentioned this yesterday. According to the quick research that I did, and you can do the same, about 43 incidents in which Americans have died, at least one, in some cases, like we saw over the weekend, 49. But since 9/11, 43 incidents in which Islamic jihadists have killed. Now, some, as I mentioned, have been labeled workplace violence and other things. domestic disputes, so on and so forth, but they are people that were driven by this radical ideology. And yes, you have to identify it. You're not going to, this is not just extremism, because notice how this administration, anything they, you know, when you talk about extremism, they put members of the Republican Party in that category. They would label Christians and have as extremists. They were returning veterans from combat as those that need to be monitored. Words have meaning, and calling this what it is the first step to defeating it and stopping it. And that's why it was very clear when the president made his speech today that the challenges by Republican lawmakers and others who have challenged him on this was getting under his skin, because he knows it's true. That's why. That's why he's agitated, because this has exposed this president and his administration. And Americans, I hope, are waking up that this is a deadly game of political correctness. It's no longer fun and games. It's no longer, well, you know, we're going to call each other names. This, people are dying because of this. And it's people that, you know, the thing about this, the president has been promoting both of these groups, the Islamic communities that have given rise to these individuals, and the gay community. I would think those in the gay community would be demanding that this president cease his political correctness and protect all Americans. Every American. I said this yesterday. Every American. I don't care their ideology. I don't care their life choices. They deserve to be protected from terrorists in this country. They should not live in fear of a terrorist coming in with a gun or with a suicide bomber with a vest or with a car or a knife or anything else. We shouldn't have to live in that kind of fear in this country. And the president has failed. The president has failed America. He has failed to keep our country safe. And I think it's willful by the failed policies that he has continued to pursue that will not call the threat what it is. The record speaks for itself. But folks, I want to encourage you to continue to pray for our country, pray for leaders, and pray for your neighbors. Pray that people will wake up and demand more out of our nation's leadership, and support local sheriffs who are supporters of the Constitution and who will defend your freedoms and your right to live without the threat of terrorists. All right. We're going to continue to talk about this. More information is going to be coming available, and we're going to continue to talk about this in the coming days. I think it's very important. Very important. We have a right to expect our government to protect us in this country. All right, folks, again, check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, the instructions of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.